Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 239, my chat with actress Danu Uribe. But first, you guys should totally buy some stuff from my sponsors because A, they are awesome, and B, I'll get some Christmas money. Yay! It's a win-win. So our first sponsor is, of course, Audible. Get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. I just started listening to the book The Gifts of Imperfection, written by Brené Brown. Y'all, I can just tell I'm going to be dotting my I's and crossing my T's better than I ever have before. And I just would never have found time to read the book if not for Audible. I swear. Audible is available on most of the devices in your house. Go now and download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. The next sponsor of this episode is PodcastCadet.com. Podcast Cadet is a company dedicated to helping you figure out the ins and outs of podcasting. Let Podcast Cadet get you started. Ask Podcast Cadet for help with your existing podcast. No matter what your question, Podcast Cadet can help. I have a webinar on podcastcadet.com about being a better host for your podcast. Check out what me and the rest of the Podcast Cadet community can do to help you do the best podcast you can do. Use code YBY20 when you contact podcastcadet.com and you'll get 20% off the workshop or service you buy. This week on Yes But Why, we talk to Danu Uribe, an Emmy-nominated voiceover and on-camera talent for commercials, video games, film, animation, and corporate training. In our chat, we talk about 4 years on the road with the intergalactic nemesis, about finding her path in the voiceover world, and about performing on stage with Conan O'Brien. If you recognize Danu's voice, it's likely because you heard her while Christmas shopping. Danu can be heard all over the country voicing brands such as Staples, Lowe's, Burlington Coat Factory, and World Market. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 239, Danu Uribe on finding the unique creative path that works for you. Enjoy! Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
To begin, let me know what it was that got you started in being a performer and doing theater.
I would have to assume it had something to do with my birth order. I'm the last of four kids, and my sister's 9.5 years older, and then I have two twin brothers that are 4 years older than I am.
Whoa.
And I think, there's something about being the last of multiple kids that makes you crave attention, partly because I was probably at that point an accidental afterthought as far as children go. I was definitely just trying to get in there, you know, like my sister, you know, I'm 3 years old, my sister's 13, but I want to hang out with them, you know? So, you know, how do you captivate a room of people that are older than you? And so I would sneak out of my bed or whatever, watch Saturday Night Live when I knew I wasn't supposed to and that kind of thing. And, just very much informed by, comedy culture at a super young age with HBO and that kind of thing. I never wanted to do stand-up in particular, but I definitely admired stand-ups. And as I got older, I thought to myself, that's a really hard job. I know that there's a lot of careers that there's a lot more pressure as far as, you know, maybe being an ER surgeon or something like that. But man, to be a stand-up, I feel like is very courageous. And I have a lot of respect for people that go that route. So I think it's just partly circumstantial for me in that way. And then I guess I had other people when I was young, sort of encourage me to do this or that. They would put a microphone in my hand at a school assembly or something. And over time, I guess I just got comfortable holding a microphone.
You know, they don't just hand microphones to anybody. You clearly already had some sort of like stage presence or like confidence enough. And also keep in mind, as a person who's an adult now who deals with young children, to whom I'm handing microphones, you're not just handing it to some schmo, right? You're like, this person is for sure going to do what we need her to do. And we trust her and she's going to do it right. And then you hand the mic to that person. So, I mean, you seem to have, you had to have had a little bit of, you know, confidence going into it, or else those adults would never have trusted you with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Were you like the MC at events? Like, were you MCing even if they didn't give you a microphone? Because I definitely was.
I mean, if I'm at a wedding or something, like, watch out, I might get up there with the band. But, you know, as a kid, I think the first time that I have photographic evidence of was either like kindergarten or first grade. There was a streak of days that had over 100 degree weather. I lived in the Valley of Texas in Brownsville. And it was like 107 for a week or something. And at some point they decided to just have everybody go into the cafetorium or whatever, because it was cooler in there. And they got some little Bluebell cups delivered. And we all sat in the cafetorium and ate Bluebell ice cream with the little wooden sticks. But somebody had the idea of having like an Indian rain dance and like starting this thing. And I don't know, somebody volunteered me. Like, it wasn't like I raised my hand, but they were like, we need somebody to, you know, start the Indian rain dance or whatever. And so I got you know, thrown to the lions. That was like my first time, you know, having to, it felt important, you know, like we needed rain really badly. So I couldn't say no, you know, it was kind of like, Jesus.
Did you want to do it? Like, not meaning like, did you want to do the rain dance? It seems like a silly thing, of course, but like, were you excited to be performing in that moment? Were you excited to perform any other time?
I think I always just felt like it was what I was supposed to do. I don't, there were many times in my life over the years where I tried to do a more practical thing. I got a desk job, or I selected a major that was going to, you know, not be performance based in college. But it always felt very inauthentic in that way. It was just sort of like, what are your superpowers, and are you going to use them, or are you not going to use them? And while I know I definitely could use a lot of those abilities in a lot of different jobs, I always sort of fell back to, I can't tell you how many times I wanted to chicken out of something, and I'd have a teacher say, no, you're going to do that solo. Like, we're not doing a show if you don't play the lead and you don't sing that song. And, you know, just like somebody just shoving me out there. And it's hard because, I've definitely dealt with fear. Like, when I'm not the person making the choice to go out there and somebody's just shoving you on stage kind of thing, I had to override that fear response over and over and over again. And so it just became, you know, second nature at some point. Like, no, that's what I got to do. But it has served me well over the years. And I adore every one of those people that pushed me along the way. You know, I don't think they were wrong. I think they saw something and they didn't want me to waste it. So
do you still get afraid every time you perform, though? Is that still something you work through?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Gentrifucked when we redid it. My artistic director at the Latino Comedy Project, Adrian Villegas, he wanted me to do the next show that they were going to do called the Star Wars at the May the 4th Cinco de Mayo Fiesta. It was a great show, but I bowed out of that show. And I explained to Adrian, I've been doing a lot of healing work on myself. I toured for several years. I lived on the road out of a suitcase, basically, when I was touring with a show called The Intergalactic Nemesis. And I didn't realize what an effect, you know, always being on has on your body and your limbic system and your nervous system. And I was suffering from the pressure of like having a morning show, a kid show, and then an afternoon show, and then an evening show, and then not getting enough sleep, and then, you know, getting on a plane or back in the van or whatever for year after year after year. It was exhausting. And when Adrian asked me to commit to this this new show that they were writing, I was like, I can't. I'm not, you know, I get stage fright. He's like, what? We've worked together for a couple of decades almost now. And he's like, you get stage fright. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, and there, you know, you can look at everything from every side of the coin, right? Like, in some regards, stage fright, you might think, is bad for you and it doesn't help and, you know, makes you feel bad in your tummy. But on the other side of the coin, it allows you this like laser precision and ability to like do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do if your brain weren't pumping out all of these, you know, adrenalized chemicals. And my brain and my body were just tired of being on, you know, day after day, because it's not natural. And that's why I have so much respect for athletes, because I know that they get stage fright too, but that's what allows them to make that three-pointer. That your brain is trying to do you some favors there. Just for me, it was a long time of doing that where I wanted to just like be able to feel relaxation in my body. I wanted to be able to take deep inhalations and exhalations and feel calmness wash over me. And it's really hard to do when that's, you know, the opposite of what your job is. So when I got off a tour, I decided to really focus on wellness, and I started working at a Pilates studio on the side just to, you know, get more in touch with my body and that kind of thing. And it's helped a whole lot.
Your friend who was like, what, stage fright? What are you talking about? I, you know, am of equal surprise. You know what I mean? Purely because I've known you for a number of years and, you know, you project great confidence and great ease when you're on stage. So to hear that it affects you so deeply on the inside is like, gosh, you're like an extra good actor, because I really can't even tell that you're feeling that on the inside. But as well as that, I totally like the idea of going on this tour and having to do it all the time. And then since you're on the tour, it's not like you get to go home and like relax after a show. You're still with the people and you still gotta be, you know, like fun time Danu in the van, you know, and you're like, all right, listen, I'm gonna put my earphones in and no one talk to me. But you can't say that because people are like, what? No, let's all hang out. This is when we bond, you know? Yeah. Man, that's gotta be rough. How many years were you on tour?
About 4 years. And I, you know, like during the holidays or stuff, I come home. I might be a little break in the summertime, weekend here, weekend there. But, you know, I never had like 8 roommates at once. You know, it was like the real world on MTV, you know, or like I'm dating myself. But,
no, absolutely. I love it. First reality show ever. That's right. Go
so
Puck.
Weird. And how other people can trigger your responses. And it was such an opportunity to learn more about myself, you know, where I'm like, oh, why did that rub me the wrong way? And what, you know, what does that remind me of? And you can, I mean, it was a real gift for me to be able to have that experience. And I'm really glad I took it. When I told my sister, my older sister, that I had that opportunity, she, you know, I was like, should I do it? And she's like, well, you kind of have to, right? And that was, I mean, and that's been the theme of like you've been chosen, you know, like you kind of have to. And I know in life it's not really like that. I mean, you do have free will and choice, but sometimes when everything in your environment is pushing you down a path, you know, do you look back or do you just go, you know, head first? And I just went head first because it was what I felt like the universe was pushing me to at that time. And it came to an end at the right time too.
Yeah. I was going to say it's always finite. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to do it forever. That's the beauty of gigs. Like some people work at a bank for 40 years. Well, nobody does, but I hear that was a thing that happened one time. And all I mean is they didn't get to try different things or go on different adventures. In this case, when you went on that tour. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was super hard. But you're right. You learned so much. Maybe it happened at a time in your life when it was like the last possible moment when you're going to say yes to something like that. You know what I mean? The world, certainly now the world is different. There's no way you could have anticipated this. But like the idea of going on a 4-year tour now is a lot different than going on a 4-year tour a few years ago. Right. And so you got to check that off your list now. Other people might not be able to, you know, it's just going to be a different kind of thing. They don't get to experience that. And I like the idea that you got your little real world experience. Like, even though it's weird and crazy, I mean, if you had never had a bunch of roommates in your life before, it's a crazy experience. And I would say generally to the audience, I would say try to do this in your early 20s and not wait. However, if you need to do it later, because that's how it leads with, you know, group tours, then, you know, that's what you got to do. Right. I mean, the first time I ever traveled for a show, I was like, you know, 36 or something like that. And like going in a van with a bunch of people to go do a show and stay over one night. It was like, this is crazy, you know, but hey, I wanted to do it before I was going to be like, no, no. Like if you asked me today, I'd be like, no, no.
So I think it was after I got off a tour, but I was shooting Christina Parrish and David Howe's movie, Call Me Brother. And they were shooting it at Christina's grandmother's house. And this is within the last several years, but I was going to sleep overnight there. And it was like, even that experience was really funny for me because here they are shooting this movie in this big house and like people are sleeping in every nook and cranny. And I'm sharing a bed with an actress that I had met that day, you know, Kim, and it was just, it was really funny because you're like, wow, I never thought I'd be like sharing a bed with a female stranger at this age, but here I am. the whole touring experience was great for so many reasons. I mean, there was a point in the tour where, you know, we got asked to perform on Conan, and there was something about that particular experience where the director of the show, I think it was after that, he was like, you're really like holding yourself differently, you know? And I hadn't noticed it, but I did. I felt different. It was weird because I anticipated being really nervous for that show, and then I wasn't. And part of that was because I had watched that documentary on Conan before I left on that trip. And he's so improv based, you know, he has so much background in improv. And I was like, oh, we speak the same language. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it was such a deep comfort that when I got on stage with him, like we just were like old friends, you know, to a certain extent, you know, meanwhile, there were other people that were around us that were super nervous, but it was just, it did something to me. It like, it kind of shut off that sort of imposter syndrome voice that a lot of really amazing performers have. They just have that voice in their head that's like, you're fake. you're not talented. You're not good enough. What are you doing here? Why are you here with all these talented people? You know, it's like, oh, wait, if at some point you are in a room with other really amazingly talented people, like, it's not a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just having that confidence in yourself and being able to really own your talent. A lot of people don't ever get to that point, you know? They make amazing things and still, you know, talk crap to themselves every night, you know?
You know, can I just say, like, what a huge shout out to improv in general. Like, the idea that it's a style of performance that you and this other person had been involved in. And even though you had never done improv with them before or knew what they had studied or anything like that, just the sheer fact that you were like, we are both aware of the rules. And you know, and I know, and we're going to be okay. And I say that because, you know, I don't know much about Conan O'Brien, but from what I understand, he's not exactly himself the most comfortable person. Like, he's pretty anxiety ridden on the regs. So, and I saw the clip with you guys, and he also seems comfortable. So I wonder if, like, just sort of that natural, like you both felt it, you know what I mean? It's like you made a person, because this happened throughout life, you know, you meet a person and you're just like, you and me are friends. We have never met before, but I can feel it, you know? And sometimes I think improv helps that. Like if there's a bunch of people in a big room and I find out one person does improv, me and that person just like, whoop, and then we're like, what's up? How's it going? Tell me everything, you know? So I love that it connected you and made you both feel comfortable enough to like enjoy that and like, you know, get to play as opposed to like, we are doing this because we are going to promote this event. Like, you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah. And that was the thing where it was like, we were performing a live radio show, right?
Yeah.
It's the style, like by like an old style radio show. So we were all at our individual microphones, but at some point he breaks the wall, you know, and walks over to me at my microphone, which is something we don't do in the show ever. We all stay stationary. And that might've freaked somebody out, being like, oh God, what is he doing? This wasn't in the script. But instead I was like, oh, he's playing with me. Okay. I like this. This feels good. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's comforting. Even if, and that's the thing, it's like improv is so, you don't know what to expect. You just have each other's backs. And that's a, you know, something that you can't, I mean, you can teach people, but it's so nice when you just fall into an environment or a situation and you can just trust that.
Yeah. And I mean, you and he both have been involved in that community for a long, 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 long time. I mean, like, since his early days, like, but even before writing for SNL, he's been doing what we're doing, essentially, hanging out with groups of people trying to make shows, right? So he gets it. He's in on it. He gets involved with improv. Let's talk about that. How did you get involved with improv? Thinking about it, all of a sudden my brain went, didn't she just tell us that she's afraid on stage? How did you, why, of all the things to choose as a performance, you'd think you'd want to do plays where you're saying lines that you know this is for sure the right thing that I'm supposed to say. How'd you get involved in improv if you have, you know, if part of your experience is the fear?
My personality is such that I am a thoughtful person, very much in my head, and I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve too. So those things both were really great for scripted work, and especially like scripted dramatic work. But and I've always had an appreciation for comedy, but I never really got any comedy experience in school, you know, like there was not an improv troupe in my high school or in my college or in my theater department. And while I did have a lead in some comedic plays, it's not the same, you know. And at the time when I was in Austin, I was kind of fresh out of college, and I was interning at one of the talent agencies in town, and I had, I guess at that point I had started working, volunteering at least at the Paramount Theater, which is a block away from the Hideout Theater where the Heroes of Comedy originated. And now I guess it's just the Hideout Theater. But anyway, it was the only place to go, as far as I knew at that point in life, for any kind of comedic anything. It definitely got me out of my comfort zone. But I see pictures where I'm like a step away, like there's a lineup and like I'm like over to the right, you know, like I can see how afraid I am in that picture, you know. But there were exercises in those classes, Shayna Merlin was in auditing one of my first classes, and we were doing like a mirroring exercise, and it was just so intense, you know, like I don't know what was going on in her head, but like we'd be like smiling and then tearing up and then smiling, and then like, you know, like there's a certain magic you have just working off of what you're getting given in that moment, and especially when there's no words involved. But I was kind of hooked in that regard of just being able to go someplace and flex those muscles and use language in a way that, you know, is fun. And you just never know what's going to come out. Over the years, I think I've gravitated away from improv, partly because I do have that, that tendency to sort of like, freeze when I'm overthinking, and I don't enjoy it. I don't think an audience probably enjoys it that much. But I will say, when I am playing with people who I'm very close to, it just comes naturally. And I think I was attracted to improv because I've been doing improv my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, I always loved putting on a hat and becoming another character and doing a funny dialect and holding that character for however many hours, you know, if it's the whole evening, I could do it. And making it believable and fun is something that I've always enjoyed doing. I just don't know if people need to pay money to see it.
It is a bit of an educational process, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But like stand-up, I think it requires the audience, you know? It's not always great.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, yeah, that joke didn't work, but that person needs to hear that joke didn't work, right? I've taught enough level one classes to know that some of the lessons that I try to tell them over and over and over are hard won on that recital night. And they walk back after the show and they tell me the thing that I've been telling them the whole time. Hey, did you know that this? And I was like, yeah, that's what I was saying. Right? You know, whatever it might be. Like, hey, did you know it's easier when you keep it simple? Yeah. Yeah, I do. I know. Yeah. I do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the day two lesson is what it was, you know? You know, just things like that are like, they come back and I go like, how'd that political scene go? And they're like, not good. And I was like, yeah, I know. I told you not to do that.
Why
would you do that? Don't do that.
And that's the thing. It's like while there are, you know, rules, air quotes, and it helps to know the rules and remember the rules. So if you want to break the rules, you can. If you don't do anything with enough frequency, it's going to be harder when you go back to do it. It's like any workout,
right, anything,
routine,
yeah,
or whatever. So for me, I was always kind of juggling multiple balls in that way. I've been in a couple of different improv troupes, but I never gave improv all of my creative energy, you know. So I think in that way, I could have. And I when I was on tour, I actually had the opportunity to have the summer off, and I went to Second City and did their summer camp. What do you call it?
Which Second City?
At the training center. Yeah, in Chicago, and I did the writing sketch and the improv one training, and that was super educational for me because I hadn't, you know, I hadn't closed my mind off to improv in any way, but I was very much intrigued by the idea of creating sketches through improv. And there were some like life choices that came into view after that experience. They kind of just, you get an impression of what it's going to be like, you know. I know there are some people that do improv as a, you know, a sort of stepping stone to their next big thing, you know, whether that's, you know, a comedy variety show or a sketch show or, you know, eventually, you know, they want to be a YouTuber or they want to be, you know, on SNL or whatever the thing is. And it can serve those people really, really well. For me, I saw people being super cutthroat in that environment, to get into, you know, whatever team that was going to be able to perform on the cruise ships, that was going to eventually be on this other team and they'd be able to, you know, tour with the thing or whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't enjoy touring enough to continue touring for the rest of my life. And if that's the next step from this place, like I've already been on tour for several years, that's not where I want to see myself, you know? And I think that that's an important lesson that my older sister taught me a long, long time ago was like, when you think about your job, like, where do you want to be? Where do you see yourself? Are you inside or outside? Are you with other humans? Are you not with humans? Are you with animals or trees? Or, you know, do you deal with paper, data entry? Or are you on your feet? You know, like all of these elements of what a job entails. And if any of those elements don't seem appealing to you, you know, there's other jobs out there. But for me, I am, you know, I was like, no, I don't want to be in a really competitive environment where people are not being nice to each other. That's not where, and I'm not saying people are not nice to each other there, that there, I met a multitude of extremely kind, loving people. But
it's okay. The Chicago improv and theater scene is a cutthroat thing. It's a tough situation. There's a lot going on there. And that town is very much a location from where, you know, a big chunk of people get famous. You know what I mean? So if that's your end game, you know, that's what you got to do. You got to do it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Lorne Michaels was in the audience at a couple shows that I was in the audience for, you know? So it's real, you know, it's a real deal.
It was.
But on the same, you know, the same idea, when we were touring, we had a couple week stay in on Broadway, and I'd never lived in New York before, but I got sort of a taste of what it would be like commuting every morning and every night and, you know, and that kind of thing. And I'm like, I love Broadway. I love singing and dancing and all the things. But I don't enjoy the quality of life in New York City. It's just not my speed, you know, and I'm aware of that. So if, you know, if in order to be an astronaut, I have to ride a missile in the rocket, like I'm not going to enjoy that experience. I can't just get to the moon without riding the rocket. So I guess I'm not going to be an astronaut, you know? And I think a lot of people have, you know, this dream of, I want to do X, Y, or Z performance wise, but they don't think about what their quality of life is going to be like, whether they can live in a home or have a cat or even have a plant. Like, you'd be like, no, you don't get any of those things ever. You live in a suitcase and that's your future, you know. That maybe that's, you know, what you thought was your dream isn't really your dream. and it's okay.
It's true. There are a lot of things to consider for the larger idea of, you know, what it takes to be an actor. And you're right. Like, there's not, there's only a handful of like, okay, you're an actor. You are going to make a ton of money and have a nice house and maybe even relationships. Who knows? But most of the time it's like, and I feel like literally from the COVID shutdown and talking to friends of mine, like across the world, like theater people, like people who are performers are on constant duty. They are always out there singing and dancing. They got the hat in the air, da 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 da. You know, like they can't stop. They constantly have to either be auditioning all the time or maintaining the show that they're in, whether it's traveling or it's playing the game, like you're saying, with the, you know, the cutthroat thing. There's cutthroat stuff in all the major. You think in LA it's not cutthroat? Oh, it is, especially for the actors that are like on television shows that aren't the famous person people are watching it for. Like the idea of that, the pressure of that, are you willing to do that for your whole life, right? Like, I have an uncle who is older. I won't tell you how old he is. You're welcome, Joe. But he's an older man. He's been acting for many, many years, and he's dealt with the crap, and he deals with the crap like today. Like, I'm talking to him recently about like the gigs he's doing and the gigs he's got to find. And it's like, oh my God, like he chose this for a full-time forever job, right? This, the figuring it out, the gig to gig, the like, I'm sure it'll be fine. You know, you have to be okay with that, and you have to be able to, you know, drop everything or juggle. If you're great at juggling and you can juggle a relationship and kids and also doing full-time theater work and figuring out how to pay bills using that, like, great. Yeah. There you go. Good for you, juggler. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, so to your juggling act, which I've, again, only watched the side bits of, you know, we know each other, but we're not like around each other all the time. So I don't know all the things you're involved in. How for you, so after you got out of college where you got a quote unquote respectable degree, then you're doing improv in Austin. How did you become an actor in film and commercials? Like, where did that come in and how did that progress for you to the other things that you ended up doing?
So I had heard a long time ago somebody tell the story of, I don't know if it was like Rita Hayworth or something, right? And she gets discovered by working in a diner or something, right?
Sure.
But somebody along the way said something really bright, which was, if you're going to get a day job or, you know, some kind of job to pay the bills while you're trying to do this other thing, do it somewhere that's in your field. Like, don't go get a restaurant job, because that's not where, you know, the people that can give you work are. I mean, you don't even know where they are. So I immediately came back to Austin, and like I said, I got an internship at a talent agency, which just taught me a lot about casting and what people are looking for and how unimaginative they might be. And the sort of dynamics of, you know, print versus on camera versus voiceover, and that kind of thing. And I learned what aspects I really liked about it and what aspects I, you know, wish didn't exist. And for me at the time, it was difficult because I didn't, you know, I'm mixed ethnicity, and, I was younger, and I just didn't feel like I fit into any sort of those casting boxes that, you know, when people are looking for a Latina, you know, she looks this way, or a girl next door looks that way. And like, I didn't look like necessarily either, but maybe a little of both. And so, I ended up, I did work selling furniture for a little while, which was just a good idea because I, you know, about home furnishings.
You know, I always say that whatever job that you get in your life, it's either going to be something where you can learn a skill that you need or somewhere where you can get a discount on things you like. Hey, man, home furnishings are expensive. If I can get 50% off on a couch, I'll take it.
Discounts are where it's at. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you are going to go get a job, like, go to a place you like to shop. I mean, you might as well.
Right.
But,
Or it's like, do you want to know how to weld? Great, get a job doing that. You'll never learn otherwise.
I mean, I know how to fluff a pillow like nobody, but and I can get fold a fitted sheet really well. But I used to go to hip hop hump days on Wednesday nights down on 6th Street, and it was great. There was a lot of hip hop talent in Austin. I don't know where it is now. Anyway, I met a guy who was an audio engineer at an e-learning company that was owned by Neil Bush and Georgie's brother. And he asked me if I had ever done voiceover work. And I told him that I hadn't professionally, but I had a teacher in college who was really hard on me. But one day he kind of gave me a compliment, and he's like, you should really do something with your voice. And I noted that in the nice column. And anyway, when this guy asked me if I had ever done voiceover work, I said no. But he asked me if I wanted to, you know, read some narration for the e-learning modules for kids. And it was right up my alley, because not only did I get to do, you know, just straight narration, but they had a lot of animated modules with different characters, and they were different ethnicities. And suddenly I was able to open up my tool chest of, you know, different ages and colors and sounds, and in a way that on camera stuff had always been very limiting for me, in particular. And so I discovered I loved this this freedom that voiceovers provided me. And at that job, I also met Dano Johnson, who is an amazing animator and filmmaker. And at some point, he had asked me to do a scratch track for a movie he was doing called Flatland. And I was basically recording the part of the lead role, Hex, for an actress to listen to so that she could, you know what she was getting into and do the role. Well, as it turns out, I was doing that for Kristen Bell, of all people. And, so that was really cool. And then I ended up also getting cast in that movie with her. But I play her grandmother, Arlene, and my husband is Martin Sheen. So while I never got to like actually interact with any of those people, and Tony Hale is in the movie too. I never got to interact with anybody. It's just cool to like see your name in the credits of, you know, an animated feature, in that way. And after that, you know, I started just doing something here or there. And it really just came down to word of mouth. I mean, people are always like, where do you get your jobs and how do you find them and this and that? And I'm like, I'm not a super competitive person. You know, I played soccer as a little kid for a couple of seasons, but eventually I'm like, here, take the ball. Like, I don't want to fight about it. And so that's kind of always been my approach, you know, whether that's to my advantage or disadvantage, but yeah, for the most part, I let things fall into my lap or have people push them on me. And then I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And it's worked out really nicely, honestly. yeah. I mean, I still audition for stuff, here and there and get the rejection like anybody else. Cause it's, you know, all about numbers and stuff, but for, you know, for all the things that people keep using me for or whatever, I mean, it's word of mouth. They ask somebody and they're like, yeah, she's, you know, she's efficient and she's versatile and she, you know, takes a direction well or whatever. And then they use me and then they're like, yeah, that's all true. And then, you know, they call me next time or whatever. So, or sometimes people will like take me with them. Like if they leave a job at one company and they go to another job, they'll take me with them in that sense, you know? So, that's always really flattering as well. I have a LinkedIn page that people say nice things about me, and I'm like, I guess it's true because they put it in print. So, <you know. laughs> have to take their word for it.
Oh, yeah. Man, you're so funny being like, I guess I have to take their word for it. You are really great. I mean, if I've talked to tons of people about what it is to audition, and usually it's more of a, you know, a slog, an uphill battle. I like the idea that it's just, and I don't want to say just worked out for you. What I mean is it's flowed from friendship to friendship, that the idea of, you know, just being good at your job and pleasant and people wanting to work with you, and then it going from gig to gig purely out of like friendliness and like respect. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's way better than some of the other stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
man.
Be hot if you want, but to have people like you enough to want to work with you multiple times, I'll take it. I'd much rather that. Like, that's an excellent skill to have. Like, put that one in a locket and keep it.
I mean, I've never had like terrible self-esteem. Luckily my parents, you know, set me up pretty well in that regard, but there are a lot of experiences that can shred your self-esteem over the years. And I feel like auditioning can absolutely be one of those things, you know, especially a lot of like in-person auditioning. You're like, they don't like me. They don't like my eyebrows. They don't like, you know, like you just like keep guessing like what is it about me that they don't like? And that can really damage you, you know. Or on the flip side, like if people do hire you because like you're hot or whatever, you know, then you start doubting if you have any craft, you know. Like, so I decided at some point, like, look, I'm just gonna be on time and do what they ask me and ask about the people in their lives and then legitimately care about the people in their lives, you know, like, and create friendships that way. You know, I think that's really important. When MTV came to Austin, they picked the Latino Comedy Project, the comedy troupe I was in, to do a campaign of ads for MTV Press, which is their like Latino MTV. And they had looked all over the U.S. for a comedy troupe, and they decided on us because we, like, weren't too Cuban or too West Coast or too New York or whatever. Anyway, it was just funny because, you know, here this big like team of people was coming to Austin to shoot us. And it was one of the first times I'd been on kind of a big shoot like that. The director there, somebody said something to somebody in a certain way. And he was like, no, we're not going to play like that here. You know, we're going to speak to each other, you know, with respect. And, you know, I don't know where you came from, but that's, you know, we're in Austin right now. And this is how we're going to treat each other. And, it was cool because it was like, oh, if you're in charge, you can decide what kind of work culture you're in. And so things don't have to be ugly or cutthroat or, you know, high pressure. Or, I mean, I understand people have deadlines and that pressure can cause stress and stress can have people acting out or whatever, but people can just be nice, you know. Like, there is a world in which like everybody there is happy to be there, you know. And
ugliness does not need to be like, rewarded.
No, right? Like, just because, you know, you're a crazy narcissist doesn't mean that you have to make this workplace toxic for everybody else. Like, and get that guy out of here. So I decided I never wanted to be one of those people, you know.
That's great. That sounds like such a great moment to have when you're like, oh no, this is about to go terribly wrong. And then the boss is like, all right, just in case we're all unclear, we're in Austin and Austin is fun. So you're all going to stop being losers and be fun instead. Like, I love that. I also, by the way, love that Austin stands for, to many people, not even just this one director, but like to many people, it stands for a certain level of like kindness. And like, whenever I talk to people about it, the vibe they get from Austin is like, oh no, good work happens there and everybody's really nice to each other. And I'm like, that's exactly mm-hmm. what I want you to think. And it's not mm-hmm. that it's untrue. It is true. It's mm-hmm. hard won. You know, I don't think it was always true. Certainly not during my, 10 years of living here. It's been up and down, but it's like, that's what we're trying to project. So thank you.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, it's our brand, you know,
we'd like you to keep reinforcing that. Yeah. You know, honestly, I feel like, you know, with COVID, there has been a big outcry for sort of community and kindness. And without any onstage performance of any kind, theater or, you know, or improv, the communities have started to connect with each other in a bit of a tighter way. You know what I mean? Like, there's mm-hmm. been a lot of people from all over the world doing shows at the theaters in town because they're online. So there's like, oh, there's this person from Sri Lanka who's going to be in the Hideout tonight. Like, what? Are you kidding me?
What?
You know, like things like that, where it's like just different people connect, but people connect in because they're like, I know this place is going to welcome me and not be weird and not potentially have, you know, no offense to Chicago. Chicago will be changing post COVID for sure, but like doesn't have the same cutthroat nature to it. I mean, you know, Lorne Michaels not coming to our shows in Austin, so I can see why it's less cutthroat, but you know, regardless, it's like, so he, even if he did come, we'd be like, come on in, bud, grab a beer, sit down. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not worried about you. I mean, I think about even Moon Tower and like when the famous people come into town, every mm-hmm. person that I've ever been able to have a conversation with has been like, God, I love when I come to this town. I finally feel comfortable. Like, it's not like I'm, you know, I want to be here because it's like, oh, good. Other real comedians, as opposed to people who either they live their whole lives on the road with just audience, or they are constantly just, they're working their way up. So they're constantly like fighting to get the best thing and they're doing this. Can I be the host of this thing? Can I be the, you know, headliner on this thing? You know, but when they get to Austin, it's just like, hey man, how are you? Great. Come on. All right. Like easy going, fun times. And I've always appreciated that.
Yeah. I definitely have a deep appreciation just for the ability to be in an environment where you can feel relaxed. And that's sort of why, you know, New York, and I was, you know, saying the speed of the city, it's just too much stimulation for me personally, you know? That's not to say that, you know, if you want something, you want to go for it, you know, like hustle, you know, like there are people that want to be, you know, want to have their evening talk show or whatever someday, you know, you know, no slight on Austin, but I know that being in an environment where you are surrounded by talent that is, let's say, of a higher level than you're currently at is the best thing for you if you want to get better at doing something. If you stay on the level of people that are currently on your level, it's harder to rise up in that way. I mean, sure, you feel like a big fish in a little pond, but you want something in an environment that challenges you. And I don't mean challenges you to like be able to pay your rent, just challenges you educationally and mentally. And sometimes you may not find that locally, and that's okay. And I say, you know, go to where you're going to find that. For me, I didn't, you know, I had enough teachers push me along the way, and now I'm ready to sit down a little bit, you know, but for people that still have that steam in them, like, yeah, go do it. Just, I hope you have a thick skin.
Well, it's like we were talking about what your sister's suggestion was. It's like, know all the details of the different jobs. Like, if you're fine with, like, if you want to become a famous person, I'm sorry, but you've got to go to LA. You just got to go. I hear it's not as fun as you want it to be, but who cares? Because that's not the part. It's like, that's not what you're focused on right now. Your apartment is overpriced and small. Who cares? Move forward. Mm-hmm. Can you sleep?
Yeah.
You're fine. Like, go do the thing. It's a toss up, right? It's like, what parts of your life do you want? And I'm going to say that, like, for me, it changes. You know, I've ebbed and flowed sometimes, like, because I lived in New York City for almost 10 years. And at the time, it was exactly what I wanted. At the time, it was like, yes, I want the heavy energy of this place. I want to try real hard. I want it to be weird and be in dirty basements doing comedy. Yes. But when I left, I was sad for a little while, but now I could never live there again. Never, ever. And I even think about my friends who are still there, who are in the same boat as I am, married with kids now. And I'm like, what do you do? How are you even doing that? Like, that's crazy, right? But it's just a matter of what you're looking for, right? Whatever your vibe is, whatever the place that makes you feel like this is home. Like, I didn't know. I grew up in Boston. Nobody was like, hi, have you heard of Austin, Texas? You should move there right away. No, I didn't even move here until I was 30. That's a bunch of my life that I was like, I guess I'll try this. I guess I'll try that, right? That's kind of what you got to do, right? With whatever you know about the job that you want to try, you got to try it here. You got to try it there. Did it work here? Well, it doesn't seem to. Let's try a different spot, right? And just find your place. And sometimes you're Conan and you're working your way up and you work on SNL and you get your own show and all sorts of great stuff. But sometimes you're not. Or sometimes you're like the guy who works for Conan and nobody knows your name, but you're still writing every day and your jokes go up on up in front of people every day. And you're like, oh, look at, they're laughing. I wrote that. That was so great. Like,
that team is tight.
There's
that
nothing. Tight. Yeah, there's just nothing wrong with whatever journey you want, whatever part of it you want to be part of. There's a spot. There's a spot for you to do it because there's a lot of jobs. And the other thing about right now is that people are leaving. It's hard. It's hard to maintain. It's hard to continue to do. And as far as I'm concerned, now it's just a waiting game of who's going to be left. Because once we come back, there's going to be a much smaller pool to pull from. So if you stick around, you're in the pool, right? They might be pulling it from anywhere. You know, speaking of which, I wanted to ask you, during COVID, have you been doing a lot of like self-tapes
for auditions?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say a lot. I've had a couple of Zoom auditions.
As many as there are.
Have been interesting.
Yeah.
A while back I told my agency, like, hey, don't submit me for any on-camera stuff because I'm just like not feeling it right now, but they still do, and then I still audition, and you know, it's just a fun exercise. You know, you gotta just work those muscles out, but but yeah, one of the reasons I gravitated toward voiceover work, not only for the freedom of expression, but like talking about quality of life, is it's really weird when somebody recognizes you at the airport at 6 a.m. in a city you don't live in because they saw you on TV the night before.
Right.
And that's never happened to you. And you're like, what's happening right now? And they're like, great job last night. You know? And I'm like, what, who are you? And depending on if you want privacy in your life ever or not, you know, will determine how famous you might want to become. You know, there is a certain point where there's no going back. It doesn't matter if you're internet famous for a day, or you were on a terrible news story, or you are an Oscar award winner. Somebody's going to probably recognize you somewhere where you're just trying to go about your daily business. And, and that's something to consider, you know, if somebody's really private, that they, you know, they're like, I want to be famous, but then you don't think about what that is. You don't think of all that you have to give up to be a celebrity. And I mean, I don't think a lot of people do, you know, they just keep going that next step forward. But for me, it sounds horrible. Like, I just want to be able to go to Costco and not have anybody bother me. You know, that's where I'm at these days.
It's like, did you like a COVID shutdown? Were you enjoying being alone in your house for a long time? Because I'm pretty sure that's the lifestyle of most very famous people. Like, I'm sure Jerry Seinfeld was like, yep, pretty regular. Still ordering my groceries. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not going out that often. Yeah. He goes out to do his car coffee show. He invented that show so he could leave his house. You know what I mean? Like,
I didn't realize that.
Well, no, he didn't. I'm making that up, but I bet you he did. You know what I mean? How else would a hugely famous person be able to leave their house without it being a super nuisance? Well, you bring a camera crew, then people aren't going to bother you.
Hopefully.
There's a PA going I'm sorry, he's in the middle of something right now. That's what you do.
I've always juggled. You were talking about juggling earlier. I've always had at least three jobs, right? So I was in my car for a good portion of the day, most weekdays. Just sort of hopping from job to job, and now I record at home too. So now I'm just not driving to studios as frequently, which I kind of like the not driving part, but I don't like the human connection that is not present anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm admittedly somewhat of a people pleaser, so having a director there telling me what they want is so useful to me. I love it so much. I love being for them to be talking at me and being like, I want you to sound more like avocado, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I got that. And they're like, no, more like sunflower butter, and I'm like, yes, okay. So I change it, make a little saltier, whatever the thing is, and it's so gratifying to me. I love doing that. There's an intimacy that I get to have at home without people that can be useful at times too. I do a lot of sort of more informational, educational kind of stuff. And, every once in a while I'll get a voiceover about, breast cancer or something. And I'll put some feeling in that, that maybe I wouldn't be as vulnerable with an audience. But so it's nice being in my little box. I've found the thing, the only dream that I have that has not, come true, would be to be on an animated series like The Simpsons that's on for decades, and that has the genius behind it of Matt Groening and that cast and that level of talent. obviously I grew up with The Simpsons. My stepkids are now growing up with The Simpsons, and I'm just putting that out in the universe. If anybody's working on anything, that's the only next level thing that I would want to do. I did voice something, an animated series called The Nomad of Nowhere, for Rooster Teeth not too long ago, and that was super fun. But it just it was just a couple seasons. So yeah, my dream would be to just have a gig like that that went on for till the end of my time.
So voiceover is pretty much your main bread and butter. Has it maintained throughout COVID?
Man, it shut down. Things shut down right there at first. But then very quickly there was a need for hospitals, banks, and veterinarians, places that were still open needed COVID messaging, basically. So my gigs have really reflected the state of the nation in the sense that I can tell when people were being more careful, when people started relaxing, when the spikes went up, when people had to get careful again, what types of activities people are doing in what states, because, I'll do voiceovers for companies, hotels, and casinos, and all kinds of venues all over the nation. And so, I'll be doing a voiceover for a casino in Las Vegas, and I'm like, oh, they're open again. Okay. And the messaging might be, please wear your mask when you're doing this or that, but the casino's open, girl, So, it's just been really interesting. So anyway, over the months, the work has picked up fairly steadily. But it's still very much COVID related information. Although now with the holidays, there's some more, uplifting shopping to do and things like that. But
maybe some holiday messages, and not just please don't die. Try to avoid dying. Mm-hmm. Now it's avoid dying and buy some gifts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. steep discounts coming this Black Friday. Yeah. So, but yeah,
this Black Friday,
it's really
we're just giving stuff away because literally no one can purchase
take it.
So just
we're gonna burn
take
the
it.
Joint down.
This we're closing up. Just take it away. Empty it out.
I mean,
brick by brick, this thing's coming down.
It's crazy. I mean, I see so many venues and stores and restaurants and places closing. You know. I'm just really, really proud of all of the business owners that have been able to pivot their business mm-hmm. in such a manner to allow them to stay in business and employing people in a safe way. You know, I mean, the whole haphazard, like, we're just going to reopen and everybody's working again and don't tell anybody if you got COVID, you know, like the whole, like, don't ask, don't tell. Okay. Like, that doesn't work with this, y'all. Like, you just need to keep your employees informed and they can make educated decisions, but don't, like, keep it a secret. I'm really impressed with companies that have been able to make it work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Yeah. And even the ones where you're like, wait, so-and-so closed? You know, like just mm-hmm. weird things where you're like, how is that? You know, I just, mm-hmm. I am looking forward, and I've said this 1,000 times, but I'll say it 1,000 more. I'm looking forward to 5 to 10 years in the future when I can watch a documentary mm-hmm. that explains to me everything that happened. Like, not just right. the science and the actual virus. No. I'm interested in the larger cultural, like, the way that the businesses were, which businesses worked well. What's the business yeah. model for those? Like, what did they do to pivot? Like, how did it work out? Because it's like, if you're a business that's open right now, and especially if you're a business that's doing well right now, like A+, like you're doing it. Like
yeah.
write a book
yeah.
immediately about how you did it, because it turns out the other ways to do it didn't keep you going, right? So you mm-hmm. are doing it and that's amazing, right? So that's a really good thing. Also, sideline back to your voiceover work, number one, what a great gig to get into, like, from the beginning. So awesome. You are great. Your voice is great. But also, like, it could keep you for your whole life. Like, you can be doing yeah. voices. You know, I think about The Simpsons. You know what I mean? Those people are quite a bit older than they were when they started, right? And yeah. yet they're still doing yeah. the voice of an 8-year-old, right? Like, that's amazing. You know, and making
it.
Hopefully millions of dollars. I don't know how much they make, hopefully a lot. But, like, they're doing this work, even, like, you know, shows that I like watching, like things like Bob's Burgers. Like, I'm like, I love mm-hmm. that they are all doing yeah. this. I love that these are all performers that do lots of other different things. Even people like H. John Benjamin, who's in a bunch of things. Like, I've heard his voice maybe a million times. It was like 3 years into listening to his voice every day before I was like, I should Google this guy and see what he looks like. And I was like, oh my God, wow, I would never have put that face to his voice. And it doesn't even matter, because he just has this ability to be 1,000 different characters, right? And that's such a skill and so fun. And I'm so glad that that's something that you do. Like, I don't know. I just wanted to, like, we were talking about COVID for a little bit. I got a little weird. And I was like, no, let's not talk about business closing. Let's talk about how Danu is great and what a cool path that you're on, like, that you can maintain for a long time. Like, super cool. Super cool.
I feel really fortunate, y'all.
So
thank you to everybody that's had a hand in my career.
Yeah.
Just a big shout out to all y'all. Yeah.
It's a good time. I mean, and you're great. So what advice would you have for actors who are, you know, trying to get into it, trying to get involved? I mean, I think one of the details I wrote down that you mentioned that I think is, like, such an amazing, like, smart move was getting the job at the talent agency just to sort of see how it worked before you were, you know, in the fray. Like, that's super smart. But, like, what advice do you have for people? Like, how do they get started? What should they be doing to get themselves ready when the world opens up again? They're going to look for people. What could they do?
I'm going to say it, and y'all may be surprised, but I highly recommend for all humans having an experience on this planet to find yourself an excellent therapist that you shouldn't trust. Regardless of whether the acting thing works out or not, it's going to serve you well. It is a lot better to be an actor that has done some introspection and understands themselves, understands what triggers them, understands how they react to things, because acting is reacting. So if, especially in improv, if you have the tendency to react in certain ways in real life, it might come out on the stage. And maybe you don't want it to, because you want to be somebody else on stage instead of yourself. So that would be the very first thing I would say to anybody. Anybody that's like, hooey, I don't need a counselor, I have friends and family or whatever. No, everybody experiences trauma every day. And maybe you have some outlets that help you through that. But I would say if somebody's looking for an answer, they're going to find it in themselves. To trust your own intuition. Listen to the nice voice in your head, not the mean one. And to follow what that nice voice is telling you, you know. There is something inside of you that will help guide you on this journey. And if you're looking outside of yourself to fill something inside of yourself, success is much more difficult. So I think for in any job, in any career path, knowing yourself is a great place to start. I guess the other thing would be to be kind, you know. I think a lot of people take that for granted, but how you deal with people, how you make people feel, even if it's a very brief interaction, you know, that person that you're signing in at the audition at that little table, you know, like, be extra nice to that person. You know, like, they have a lot more power than you think. You know, that kind of thing. And not taking things personally, because while you'll probably receive a lot of criticism on your journey, hopefully they're critiquing a performance. They're not critiquing you as a human being. Don't internalize it. Just try to find ways to relieve stress and let it go, because it's just like dating. It's just a numbers game, and eventually you're going to find a good match, you know? So those types of things. I know that was like not really career based. Oh, the other thing is to listen more than you talk. You know, it's something I tell people, that if you're in a room surrounded by people that know more than you do, shut up. Don't try to captivate them and, you know, grab their attention or whatever. I mean, yeah, a nicely placed joke in a conversation might get you some points, but like really, really listen, actively listen, put your phone down, you know, like make eye contact, connect with that other person there. Yeah. I mean, put your phone down. just all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put your phone down.
Connect with people. Yeah. Connect with people like in person, you know, you're 10 feet away, whatever. Also wear your mask. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's just the sort of like the kind of stuff that will help you every day, but will especially help you on the difficult journey of, you know, being an actor. For sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Thank you, Danu, so much for chatting with me and being on the podcast, chatting about your experiences. And, you know, just I'm really excited that the voiceover work continues for you. I'm sorry that it's weird, but, you know, it'll improve. You know, like you said, it's the holidays. Yeah. Pretty soon it's like, you know, Saint Nick is on his way. You know, you'll be saying more pleasant things. But I'm so glad that you're working, and I'm so happy you're out there. And I know that you'll be working hard and, you know, in more projects as projects start happening.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you do any holiday shopping, listen out for my voice overhead.
I love that. I'm going to be listening for you everywhere.
It's kind of creepy sometimes. I'm like, oh, that's me. Over here, that's me.
You're all over the country just telling people to wear their mask. I like it.
Yeah. Or what sales, you know, you can save on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I've always been frugal, so I'm like, it is my pleasure to help people save money.
That's so funny. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thank you, Danu. Thank you so much for being on the show.
And thank you for thinking of me.
Oh, absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
It's been really great.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.